It is Wednesday, September 27th, and live from Chicago's Progressive Talk Studios on Milwaukee Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In our third and final hour of the program, Mr. Bike's making the three-peat, David Glowatz, Mr. Bike, and this is from Mr. Bike, all right? Call in with any questions about biking. At 773-763-9278. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist, Ben Jarofsky.
Yes, Mr. Bike is in the studio, Dave Glowatz, but he's resting up. He's oiling his chain right now. So while he oils his chain.
Smart man.
Yeah, you know, you got to keep that chain oiled.
They don't call him Mr. Bike for no reason.
He knows how to oil a chain, all right? But first, Chicago News with Laura Vaughn.
Guys, oiling your chain sounds like code for something.
Okay. Well, when you bring it up, it really does.
Thank you, Laura. Ben Jarofsky here, and with me in the studio, Dave Glowatz, who's also known as Mr. Bike. He's a certified bicycling instructor, or as I call it, bicycling instructor, and the author of the best-selling paperback, Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips. And you can find him at MrBike.com. That's MRBIKE.com. And you have a Facebook thing? Oh, and a bell. Wait, you're on Facebook now?
Why not?
No, I didn't. It's not like I say you should be on Facebook. That wasn't the point of what I was going.
You've just never been to my Facebook. Obviously, you don't like my Facebook page.
Well, no, I didn't know you were on Facebook is what I was saying. How long have you been on Facebook?
Since I first got my chain oiled.
Well, I'm not going there.
Too late.
Anyway, yeah, because we're there now. You know, we were talking briefly with John Willer, who was in the studio from Kankakee County.
Mr. Kankakee, I understand.
Mr. Kankakee. My fantasies I had when I ride a bike that I'm Steve McQueen in The Great Escape. Do you have any fantasies when you're riding a bike?
I fantasize that there are no cars on the street, but it's a difficult fantasy to maintain in Chicago.
So you don't think of yourself as like a motorcycle rider or a cowboy on a horse?
I think you know a little bit about my predilections around motor vehicles. So no, I'm not thinking about Steve McQueen. I know a lot of bicyclists have fascination with racing, bicycle racing,
yeah.
A la Lance Armstrong. And maybe cyclocross, but I'm not a big fan of that stuff, so I don't imagine myself racing across the finish line. Mostly I'm trying to imagine, what would this be like if there were no cars out here?
Okay, that's what you're thinking, but I'm actually like, yeah, I'm Steve McQueen.
Yeah, that was you and you left me yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that's, sorry about that, Dennis. when we were riding home yesterday, I don't know if you heard Ben Jarofsky, it was actually Dennis Theater. He wrote a bit about how we were riding home from work yesterday, right from the studio, down Elston Avenue, and he went over a rock and had a flat tire. How about that?
I told him he was lucky not to have his rim bent.
Yep, you hear that?
Where are you at, Laura Vaughn, on that one?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I wasn't going to say one thing.
I wasn't going to touch that one with a 10-foot bicycle. No, I don't think your rim is bent. I think his rim is.
I saw what I can, but he looks pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, have you ever had flat tires? Is that a common occurrence?
Do chickens have lips? I mean, yeah.
I've never had one. I'm now jinxing myself, but never had one.
Here's a quick Mr. Bike tip for one of the reasons that bicyclists get flat tires is because they don't have their tires fully inflated. Now, can you imagine why that would be the case?
No, I have no idea.
Give a guess. So if your tire's not fully inflated, what does that mean with respect to the tire?
It's flat.
Flatter. Yeah.
So, there's no protection against a puncture? I don't know. I'm making it up.
Yeah. So when your tire is ideally inflated, that means it should be what some bike instructors call as hard as frozen butter, and you could just barely squeeze it. You know, it should be really, really hard. So if you roll over, say, a piece of glass, if the tire is fully inflated and really, really hard, that glass will just spin off, whereas if the tire was soft, the glass could embed itself and then puncture. So that's one of the big reasons that people get flats is because they don't pay any attention to having their tires inflated. Now, a second Mr. Bike tip is,
go ahead.
You have with you at all times a way to measure the inflation of your tire.
How? What?
Hold up your hand.
Yeah.
Put out your thumb and your index finger. If you squeeze your tire with those two fingers, and it gives, and it's like, it's any softness, you should inflate it so it isn't.
Now, You should see this. Dennis can vouch for this.
He's
many
still holding
times
up his finger.
As we're about to leave the studio, go, hey, D, man, feel my tire. Tell me if it's...
No, you should poke it. He's poking it, folks. No, and just, like, squeeze.
There's a...
Air compressor.
This big old thing I have in the studio. Like,
I like, wait, you guys have an air compressor?
Yeah.
Oh, you want to use it, man?
Not this moment.
We got you, dude. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry.
Why do you have an air compressor?
You know, why? Yeah. I'm not sure why. It's just one of the many mysteries.
What are you
in the
guys
studio
inflating here?
No clue. No, just roll with it.
You're inflating your ratings, baby.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, there's an air compressor, and so every now and then, Dennis drags it out. It's like drilling in the middle of the studio.
Interesting.
Anyway, we'll have more tips from Mr. Bike after this. Dave Glowatz in the studio with me, also known as Mr. Bike. And to me, in my mind, Dave, as you know, bicycling in Chicago is linked with a certain political behavior, a certain exuberance. We've discussed this many times. I'm sure we'll be discussing this where we're in the senior citizen home in
right after the show.
Right after the show, man. And bike riders are always so grateful when the city does anything for them. They're just so happy. So when Mayor Daley, as I always like to point out, started building bike lanes, not he literally, but he ordered the city to do so, bike riders were just so happy. They went out and voted for Mayor Daley time after time after again. And now Rahm's caught on. He's like, oh, man, I just put a divvy out here every now and then. I own him for life.
Well, he had some of those bike-oriented transportation people on his transportation transition task force.
Yeah.
So you say he caught on. It wasn't difficult.
No, he figured that out. He actually rides a bike. I don't know if he does it for, you know, the commuting.
For Ted trivia points, where did Mayor Daley like to ride his bike?
I know this. I believe that Mayor Daley had a summer home in southern Michigan. So that would be southwestern Michigan. I do not know the name of the town, but he enjoyed riding his bike around whatever town that was. On the... Does that ringing bell mean I got it
correct
right?
Correct answer. Yeah, yeah. I believe it's Grand Beach.
Michigan, whatever. But he was not a city rider, as I recall. He did not ride around the
city. I don't know anyone who ever saw him on a bicycle in Chicago.
Yeah. Well, once I saw him near a bicycle. That was when I wrote about this for the Reader. It was Bike to Work Day, I want to say. And that's when I first became aware of this bizarre relationship between sort of the biking community.
Because the city has this huge festival in Daley Plaza around Bike to Work Day.
Does it still do that?
I haven't been to one recently.
Yeah.
So I can't speak to the scope of them these days. But back in the day, that was where all the bikeriat used to come out in front of the mayor, and they'd get to sit on the stage with them, and there'd be awards. And
That's when I was wow. There were a few. I wrote about these guys who were like a couple maverick bike riders who were actually, even though Daley put a bike lane in, they were going to vote for. They were like me, you know, I'll vote for anybody who's in Daley for
maybe
mayor.
The critical mass contingent.
Yeah. Well, was it the critical? And they were asked not to participate in Bike to Work
Day. Disinvited.
Yeah. They're like, don't come. So I remember I went to Bike to Work, and there was Daley, and I think he actually at one point may have like for a photo op posed around a bicycle. So there, you know.
So there is a photo of him with a bicycle. I was there for the taking of that photo, and somebody gave him a bicycle to take the photo with. And many people thought, oh, that's his bike. That's a pretty tricked out bike he has. But no, it wasn't his bike.
No, it wasn't his bike. It was a photo op. All right. So that leads me to this. Bicyclers and Amazon. To me, there's a correlation, a connection in my mind. The city wants to bring Amazon to Chicago. They're competing with hundreds, maybe not hundreds, but dozens of other cities, municipalities, towns, states, etc., for the right to get Amazon to come. What's your thoughts on Amazon coming to Chicago?
I want to do a little history lesson first. If we go back to the 90s, the early 90s, that's when the federal government first made federal transportation funds available to municipalities, to states, to locales, to tap federal funds for things like bicycling facilities. Mm-hmm. And the justification for this was to alleviate traffic congestion, which affects quality of life, to alleviate air pollution and to make cities more livable. So that's what really kickstarted, many believe, bicycling facilities in places like Chicago and cities all over the nation.
What years was this, did you say?
Well, the seminal year was 1991. Mm-hmm. Every 5 or 7 years when Congress authorizes the big transportation bill, which they haven't done as regularly since then because of...
So that was during George Bush's presidency. 1991 would have been George Bush.
Oh, you're right. So 92 was Clinton's first year in office.
That is correct. So during the Bush years, that's what I was surprised by, that George Bush would be the instigator. I can't imagine a Republican these days promoting bicycling.
Well, at that time, things weren't, as you might recall, as partisan. So this was just part of the regular transportation funding that was going on at the federal level. So anyway, to make a long story short, that's when all these bicycling facilities started to come up because all this money was available. But we fast forward to the late 90s, early 00s, into Chicago with the Daley administration. That looks to, I'm guessing, somebody like Daley, not only a way to do what it was originally intended to do, which is to make a city more livable, alleviate traffic congestion, improve air quality, but to rack up points with a certain constituency, mm-hmm. Namely these sort of granola, perhaps North Shore. And I'm grossly
simplifying, generalizing.
Yeah, but there's a certain demographic mm-hmm. that in a place like Chicago historically has bicycled. It's a twofer, right? You get a more livable city and you appeal to that constituency.
So that was a successful move by Daley. He probably would have had those voters anyway by virtue of the fact of who they were demographically, but further gave them reason. I remember, I may have told this many times before, a guy at the bowling alley was very drunk, so I probably shouldn't hold it against him, although I still haven't got over this. He's in the tech business. And he's probably listening right now. Anyway, he staggered over to me and he goes, "You're always writing about those TIFs, but I have no reason not to vote for Mayor Daley. He gave me a bike lane." And that's when it popped into my mind.
So this is the emblematic guy for you.
Yeah, that's the dude, man. Okay. And that brings me to Amazon. So many of my tech-oriented friends are just so thrilled with the notion that Amazon would come to Chicago. Last week, I wrote a column for The Reader. It was very critical of the city spending untold millions of dollars to get Amazon here. We don't even know how much we're going to offer them. I'm sure the offer has been made already, one way or the other. And we probably won't know how much money we're offering to them until the moment the city council is about to vote for it, if we're to get it. And yet so many Chicagoans are enthusiastic about it, and they're very upset with my article and very upset with me because I don't share the enthusiasm. Am I wrong or right to draw a correlation between bicycling enthusiasts and people who are excited about Amazon coming to Chicago?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the Amazon requests for proposals asks for a certain number of things that cities should provide. Mm-hmm. And among those are amenities for its employees, and it wants transportation options for its employees. Those employees, a lot of them will want to bicycle to work and want to bicycle when they're away from work. I think there's your correlation. Employees of many of the companies in the tech sector that are now moving into Chicago, even companies not in the tech sector, like the McDonald's headquarters that's coming to Chicago, those employers want to attract the kind of people who want to bicycle to work or bicycle when they're outside of work. I think that's a pretty clear thing. So next question is, with all those people coming to Chicago, do we want to improve bicycling facilities in the places they might want to go? For example, Goose Island, or what's known as the Finkelsteel site, which is being slated by or being proposed by some people as the perfect fit for Amazon, what's called HQ2. Mm-hmm. There's a premier bicycle trail just to the west, the Bloomingdale Trail, which some call the 606. Mm-hmm. Part of a vision that's being promulgated by the developer of that site, Sterling Bay, mm-hmm. is to extend that Bloomingdale Trail underneath the Kennedy Expressway across the Chicago River and all the way to the lakefront. And that would go right through or right past that development.
So you're drawing a correlation, whether you realize it or not, between gentrification and bike riding.
Well, it's a chicken egg thing. The question that always comes up in these conversations is, do bicycling programs foster gentrification? consider this, where the city chooses to implement bicycling facilities is often where the demand is. Like I noticed on the way here, Milwaukee Avenue, where the studio is located, already had bike lanes on it, but looks like they're just finishing up putting in what's called traffic calming, where they're putting in these projections at each corner so motorists who are in the parking lane can't pass all the way through the intersection. There's what's called a bulb out. That makes it safer for bicyclists, too, because you don't have these motorists trying to pass in the bicycle lane. So how does the city decide where to put stuff like that? One of the ways I know from having worked in the bike program is they do bike counts. In other words, the facility is driven by the demand. But on the other hand, we have all these disenfranchised parts of the city where people don't bicycle. And why don't they bicycle? They can't afford bikes. There aren't retailers in the area that can sell or repair bikes. There's crime that people are concerned about in terms of their bikes being stolen or being assaulted while they ride their bikes. So does that mean the city should not provide bicycling facilities in those neighborhoods? Again, chicken egg. You know, if you build it, will they come? So those are the kind of flip sides of that issue.
Yeah, so there is a planning correlation that you're alluding to. And I think there's the one I'm talking about is a more psychological correlation. And we'll get into that in a little while. But first, we have some business to take care of.
Want to talk politics with Ben Jarofsky? How about biking? You want to talk biking with Mr. Bike Dave Gloatz? Well, you can, and we prefer it. 773-763-9278.
With me in the studio, Dave Gloatz, also known as Mr. Bike. He's a certified bicycling instructor or bicycling instructor and the author of the best-selling paperback Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips. You can find him at MrBike.com. That's MRBIKE.com. The man knows more about biking in Chicago than anyone in the universe. Folks have been waiting for a while to talk to you, Dave. Let's bring him on. We'll see what Rick has to say. Hello, Rick. You're on the air with Dave Gloatz.
I just wanted to get your opinion on the bike paths or lanes that they have fabricated between, like, the curb and the parked cars. I find them extremely dangerous. There's no place to maneuver or get out of a crisis situation, as opposed to having more space to maneuver, etc.
Rick, are you saying as a bicyclist in that lane?
What's that?
Are you saying when you're you yourself are bicycling in it?
Oh yeah, and for instance, on Kinsey, they have a fixed lane, and I think on Clybourne, right?
Yeah, they just put those in on Clybourne a couple of years ago.
So, what's your opinion of that? Especially if you're riding at any rate of speed at all.
These are called, in the lingo, protected lanes. And as Rick was saying, unlike the, I guess you'd call the standard bicycle lane, in that two ways. One is that standard bicycle lanes on a street that has car parking on it, the bicycle lane is to the left of the car parking. And that sets up what I call the door zone, because it puts bicyclists right next to opening car doors, which the city is starting to address by striping a little buffer zone right in the area next to cars, so cyclists get a visual indication that they shouldn't be riding so close to the cars. And the second way that it's different is that it's next to the curb. The bike lane is next to the curb, and they move the cars, they kind of flips it, actually. Instead of the parked cars being next to the curb and the bicyclists being to the side of traffic, it puts the bicyclists next to the curb and the parked cars closer to traffic. And then in between where the bikers are and the parked cars are, there is some kind of buffer, depending on how much room they have on the street. On North Clybourne Avenue that Rick was just talking about, they've put in about, I don't know, 2 or 2.5 feet of concrete, raised concrete, so it's a really big barrier so that motorists opening car doors or getting out of their cars won't hit bikers. On other places like Kinsey, where I think it was the first place that the city put in protected bike lanes, they just put in bollards, you know, it's about 3.5 feet high,
right?
Slightly
plastic
flexible
bollards.
Yeah, so you could smack them, but you know, they just kind of bend in, kind of like Buddhism, you know.
Right.
So
or in Skokie on Dodge, they've put it basically from California, from the city zone, Howard throughout Dodge. And really, the problem is
that's actually Evanston.
In Evanston. Mm-hmm. And then, so if somebody opens a car door, you really don't have a place to bail out, you know?
Oh, man, Rick, I could talk for hours on this one.
So let me get three quick things on this. One is that I'm for something that gets people out of the door zone. Like Rick just mentioned, that if the door opens, you don't have any room to bail. And that's a function of the design. Like I just said, if they have enough room, like they do on Clybourne, the city will put in a bigger buffer so the door doesn't enter into the bike lane. But if they don't, that's a problem. Number two, the problem with bike lanes generally, from Mr. Bike's perspective, is that eventually the bike lane ends and the bicycle rider who is going along protected from traffic, if you will, feeling that they have some kind of buffer around them, some force field or whatever you want to call it, they're dumped out of that and they have to deal with traffic in no protected way, in a way that requires them to have traffic skills that they might not have, that a bike lane lulls them into believing that they don't have to have. Mm-hmm. So that's problematic. And then thirdly, in a place like Clybourne where they're pouring a lot of concrete, these things can be darned expensive. And as I've said before on this show, I think that money should be better spent in ways to get people out of cars in a more practical way, such as improving transit. Mm.
Well, before we go there, and I will go there, I just have to tell you, I know exactly what Rick's talking about. I've made that ride many, many times. It's California and Chicago. You cross Howard Street, go into Evanston, becomes Dodge. A dear friend of mine lives not far from there, so when I watch games like Thursday's Bears-Packers game, I'll be at his house and I'll be right down there. And Dave, you don't escape the door opening situation. It's just the passenger door. So follow me on this. You have a car parked. The passenger gets out. That's the door that you'll hit.
So again, that's a function of the design. If the area between the bike lane and the parked cars isn't wide enough, then yeah, you're going to have that issue. But I just want to push back on that a little bit. First of all, I just want to say I'm not crazy about this whole thing, but just to be fair about it, many cars have only one occupant, and that's the driver. So arguably, by moving the bike lane from the driver's side door zone to the passenger side door zone, you're probably going to end up with fewer doorings, but I completely see the point.
I've been riding a bike in the city of Chicago since 1981. I've always been a bike rider and a commuter bike rider. I'm not as we've talked about, a recreational bike rider. I don't do it for exercise, although you do get exercise when you do it, but I'm not doing it for that reason.
What's to do with your feet up on the handlebars?
That is correct, or unless you really do have a motorcycle. Is it safer now than it was then? I'm trying to think back, Dave. I can't say with certainty that even with all the lanes and these traffic devices that you're describing, I don't know if it's any safer now than it ever was. It's still a little scary.
There's a couple different ways to answer that. If we look just at statistics, we should look at the crash rate, because the number of crashes in itself is not indicative of the likelihood that you're going to get into a crash. So as the number of bikers on the street goes up, if the number of crashes that people get into also goes up, then it's not getting any safer. Secondly, there's a perception of safety. Never mind the statistics. If there are lots and lots of things like bike lanes, protected or not, and bike parking racks and events to encourage bicycling, people perceive because of those encouragement activities that bicycling is safer, so they'll be more inclined to try it. There's a good and bad of that. It's argued, and I think there's some credence to this argument, that there's safety in numbers. If there are more bikers, motorists are more aware. But secondly, you have all these people who are encouraged to bicycle who do not really have good traffic skills and are more likely to get in trouble.
Yeah, I'm going down. You've always used to correct me. Never ride your bike the wrong way down a one-way street.
Mr. Bike says the single most dangerous activity you could do on a bicycle
is to ride. So whenever, oh my goodness, you do not want to know what I do to get here more often than not.
I'm getting an idea.
Yeah, I shoot up this one street, but in my defense, which is really not a defense at all, because what I'm about to say is also probably, well, no, I don't think it's illegal. A lot of times I just go on the sidewalk. In fact, the other day, I rode all the way, follow me on this, from Bryn Mawr to Howard Street on Pulaski, and I never left the sidewalk.
Well, technically, that is against the law.
Mm-hmm.
What's the age at which you should no longer ride on the sidewalk in Chicago?
I don't remember this at all.
12.
Is that a rule, or is
that's
Mr.
municipal
bike rule?
Code? Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, so it's not 12 in dog years. This is actual human years.
Wait a minute, that's actually in the code. I did not know that.
There are certain carve outs for things like if you're going to the entrance of something, or you're coming from an exit of something and going to a bicycle facility or the street, you can use the sidewalk for that short interval. And then certain areas of the city, there are designated bike lanes on the sidewalk. I believe there's a place on Roosevelt right by State Street that's like that. But for the most part, no, it's against the law.
Huh. Well, I just violated that law.
Well, generally, you're not going to get nailed for that unless you're in the central business district, I think.
Yeah, and there was nobody around. I mean, it was completely empty on the sidewalk. The sidewalk along Pulaski, there's nobody there.
Mr. Bike says, if you're riding on the sidewalk, look for entrances of residences and businesses and be very careful. Either get far away from them so someone jumping out doesn't hit you or you don't hit them, or slow to walking speed.
Yes. Also look out for alleys.
Do what Mr. Bike calls the creep and peek. If you can't see around the corner by an alley because of the wall of a building, you should creep to a slow enough speed where you could peek around the corner and ensure yourself that some SUV isn't going to come charging
up.
Creep
and peek. That sounds bad in some ways. Creep.
Worse or better than oiling the chain.
Yes. All right. Now, helmets, bike helmets. So many people I know, my generation, make fun of people like myself who use a helmet. It's a kind
derisive.
Of, yeah. It's like, oh, look at you with your
dork
helmet. Yeah.
Look at you with your dork helmet.
Hey, leave him alone.
I recall,
he's my friend.
I recall an article somewhere, may have been the Reader, where the bicyclist was saying that really helmets, sort of making the argument that they're not all that necessary. I was shocked when I read that article.
All right, real quick, from a philosophical standpoint, there are two kinds of safety measures one has when one bicycles. So there's more than that, but two general ones that I want to talk about. One is primary and the second is secondary, oddly named. Primary is the skills that one has to prevent a crash. A moment ago, you talked about something that one should never, ever, ever, ever do, which is bicycle against traffic for a variety of reasons. Motorists don't expect you there. Pedestrians walking out from between parked cars aren't looking in that direction, etc. That's a primary safety measure. In other words, bicycling in a way that will prevent you from getting into a crash. A helmet is a secondary safety measure in that it only helps you after the crash has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, again, going against traffic and a large truck is coming at you at 30 miles an hour,
yeah,
I don't think the helmet's going to do you much good if you get into a head-on collision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just, that's something to keep in mind.
But what's the argument for not wearing a helmet? Aren't there some cyclists who say that it doesn't really matter, even as a secondary device protecting you?
It couldn't hurt, right? Helmets are pretty cheap nowadays, and there used to be a variety of standardization, but now there's a Consumer Product Safety Commission in the U.S. standard that all helmet retailers, anybody who sells a helmet, has to sell a helmet that's certified. It's cheap and easy, so I say, why not?
Well, I noticed something. This is like a cousin of the helmet debate, the seatbelt debate. I noticed this in two recent movies. This is a psychological factor. Follow me where I'm going, Mr. Bike. One movie was called Lucky Logan, and the other movie was called Hell or High Water. In Lucky Logan, the character, who was a rough-and-tumble kind of guy, who I guess they lived in North Carolina, did not put his seatbelt on. When his son got in the car or his daughter got in the car with him, I noticed this. He leaned over and he put her seatbelt on, and then he turned on ignition and he drove off. He didn't put his seatbelt on, and that had to be a conscious decision.
So we see this with parents who are bicycling with their children.
Yes.
And one of the ways that we bicycling instructors approach that issue is to say to those parents, wouldn't it be terrible if there was a crash and your children were without a parent because you weren't wearing your helmet? I tend not to go that route too often. I don't want to guilt trip people around helmets. I want to stress rather the primary safety measures around what things can you do when you're in traffic to minimize the likelihood that you're going to get into a crash. So I tend not to guilt people about helmets for that reason.
Well, I think it's not a bad idea. And the second movie, I'll just say, Hell or High Water. Have you seen either one of these movies?
Yeah, sorry.
All right, Hell or High Water. At the end of the movie, a bank robber, who's a real tough guy, is driving and he comes up to a police barricade and they're looking for the bank robber. So as he's approaching the police who are at this barricade, who are going to ask him to roll down his window and show him ID, he puts his seatbelt on.
Because that's a reason to be cited.
It's a reason to be cited. Here he'd been speeding at high speeds on these high-speed chases. He hadn't been wearing a seatbelt. I can't believe, what? A conscious decision by the filmmaker that says a certain prototype, a certain type of American will not wear a seatbelt.
But that is another example of primary versus secondary safety measure, because he was violating the primary measure, which was speeding.
Yeah.
But not speeding is one way that you will avoid a crash.
All right, let me ask you this. What's more insane, to drive a car without a seatbelt or to ride a bike without a helmet?
More insane, more dangerous is the former.
Okay. All right, same thing, dangerous, insane. You always got to watch your language with Mr. Bike. He's precise. Mr. Bike, before we leave, yes or no? Are you the one bicyclist in Chicago who's not in favor of giving money to Amazon? Well, I ride a bike too. Yes or no? Money for Amazon to come to Chicago?
No. And I think in the news now, it's very topical about, you know, taking the knee. I think that's what the Emanuel administration is doing with this project.
What do you mean by that?
I believe the Emanuel administration is doing a kneeling of a different kind on this project. On bended knee.
Oh, on bended. Oh,
and there's another. There's another connotation that I'm not going to go into.
Yeah, there's another one. All right, that's Mr. Bike. It took a while for it to penetrate, but then it did.
What?
Now I see the world in a new way. Dave Glowatz, also known as Mr. Bike, is a certified bicycle instructor and the author of the best-selling paperback Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips. You reach him at mrbike.com. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for coming by. He brings his own bell. See you tomorrow, everybody.